Whispers from the Dark Season. 2 Episode 4, Predjama Castle, hosted by Raven Vale. There are places in this world that feel wrong. Not broken, not abandoned, not cursed in the way horror stories warn us about. They feel wrong because they exist where they shouldn't. Because the laws of nature and logic and human ambition all say no, this cannot be. And yet there it stands, defying expectation, defying reason, defying the mountain itself. Predjama Castle is one of those places. It does not stand proudly on a hill like Windsor or Neuschwanstein. It does not crown a mountain peak like the fortresses of Tibet. It does not overlook a kingdom with the commanding presence of Edinburgh or Prague. Instead, it is embedded, carved into the living stone of a sheer limestone cliff, pressed into the mouth of a massive cave as if the mountain itself swallowed it halfway, and then froze in time, unable to finish what it started. From a distance, Predjama looks like a scar in the rock, white stone interrupting dark stone, symmetry clashing with nature's chaos, human geometry forced into ancient geology. But the closer you get, the more unsettling it becomes. Because this castle doesn't feel built. It feels grown, as if the mountain opened itself one day, and the fortress simply filled the void. As if the stone decided to take shape, and human hands merely guided what was already inevitable. Tonight, on Whispers from the Dark, we travel to southwestern Slovenia, to a stronghold that survived siege, betrayal, starvation, and centuries of silence. A place that could not be conquered because it was never fully accessible. A structure that defied every military principle of its age, yet somehow endured when greater fortresses crumbled. This is the story of Predjama Castle. The fortress built into a cave, the structure that should not exist, and the darkness beneath it that still does. I'm Raven Vale, and you're listening to Whispers from the Dark. Long before the castle existed, long before medieval masons carved the first stone or architects drew the first plan, the land around Predjama was already feared. Not avoided entirely. Humans are too curious for that, but approached with caution, with ritual, with the kind of respect you give to things that can kill you without warning. The karst region of Slovenia is riddled with sinkholes, underground rivers, and caves so deep and complex that even modern mapping technology, with ground-penetrating radar and laser measurement, struggles to fully understand them. The ground here collapses without warning. Not gradually, not with tremors or cracks that give you time to run. Suddenly, a shepherd walks his flock across a meadow in the morning, and by evening, that meadow is gone, swallowed into a hole that drops 200 feet into chambers no human has ever seen. Entire hillsides disappear overnight into caverns that were always there, waiting beneath the surface like trap doors. Water disappears into stone, vanishing midstream, and emerges miles away with no logical connection. Hydrologists have tried to trace these underground rivers with dye and tracking devices. The water goes in. Sometimes it comes out, sometimes it doesn't. And when it does, the timing makes no sense. Water that should take hours appears in minutes. Water that should take minutes takes days. Sound behaves strangely here, traveling farther than it should in some directions, stopping dead in others, bending around corners that shouldn't affect it, echoing back from impossible directions, returning from places that have no surfaces to reflect sound. Acoustic engineers have studied the phenomenon. They can document it. They cannot explain it. To early inhabitants, this land felt alive. not alive in the way forests feel alive, with birdsong and rustling leaves and the predictable rhythms of seasons. Alive in a deeper, more unsettling way. Alive like something watching, like something breathing, like something aware of you in return. They believed the caves were mouths, that the earth breathed, that something below listened to footsteps on the surface and remembered who walked where. And they were not superstitious fools. They were people who survived in harsh conditions, who understood their environment better than we ever will, who paid attention to patterns we're too comfortable to notice. The cave behind Prajama stretches for miles, not in a single direction, but in a branching labyrinth of chambers, shafts, and hidden passages formed over millions of years by water that carved through limestone with patient, relentless precision. Water doesn't rush through stone. It seeps. It dissolves. One molecule at a time, removing calcium carbonate grain by grain, creating voids that expand over geological time until they become rooms, halls, cathedrals of darkness that dwarf any human construction. Long before medieval stonecutters arrived with their tools and their plans and their iron confidence, humans entered this cave. Archaeological evidence confirms it beyond any doubt. Stone tools dating back thousands of years, worked flint and shaped obsidian, found deep in chambers that required crawling through narrow passages to reach, fire pits arranged in deliberate patterns, not random cooking sites, but geometric arrangements that suggest ceremony, animal remains placed intentionally, not discarded as refuse, bones positioned with care, as if offerings rather than garbage, skulls facing specific directions, teeth removed and arranged in lines. These were not shelters. You don't crawl into darkness to shelter. You don't carry fire deep into unmapped tunnels for warmth when the surface is safer and easier. These were intentional spaces, sacred spaces, or perhaps something else entirely. Places of ritual, places of communication, places where the boundary between what is and what should not be grows thin enough to slip through, which raises an unsettling question that historians still debate in academic journals and archaeological conferences. Why did early humans keep returning to this cave, generation after generation, century after century, millennium after millennium? What drew them into darkness when safety lay in sunlight? What ritual or need or compulsion pulled them back into the stone? These were not desperate people seeking shelter from weather or predators. These were organized communities with permanent settlements. They had homes, they had fire, they had the entire surface world available to them. Yet they came here, repeatedly, deliberately, bringing offerings, performing ceremonies, entering the darkness not out of necessity, but out of purpose. And did they go willingly? Or did something call them? Was this worship or response, devotion or compulsion? And if something did call them, is it still calling? Prajama Castle first appears in written records in the 13th century, in a land registry from 1274 that mentions a Castellum Lueg, or Castle of the Jaw. Jaw, not cliff. Jaw, not mountain. Jaw, not cave. Jaw. As if the medieval scribes understood what they were looking at. A mouth in the rock. An opening that swallows. Though many historians believe an earlier structure existed on the site. Perhaps a watchtower from the time of Roman occupation. Perhaps a chapel built by early Christian missionaries trying to sanctify pagan sites. Perhaps something older still, built for purposes we no longer understand by people whose names we've forgotten. The land remembers what records don't. the decision to build here defied conventional medieval logic in ways that still puzzle architects and military historians today. Every textbook on castle construction, every manual from the period, every practical consideration of defense and lordship says this location is wrong. Castles were meant to be visible from great distances, dominant, intimidating. They were built to be seen from miles away, to announce power and control, to remind everyone within sight who ruled the land. A castle was a symbol before it was a structure, a statement of authority that needed to dominate the landscape. Prejama hides. It crouches in shadow like something ashamed or afraid. It uses the cliff as camouflage rather than advantage. From certain angles, it's almost invisible. The pale stone blending with the limestone face, the dark windows vanishing into shadows that seem natural until you realize they're not. It doesn't announce itself. It reveals itself only to those who already know it's there, which is the opposite of what castles were supposed to do. Its back wall is not built. It is the cave itself. Raw stone, millions of years old, left exposed and incorporated directly into the structure. Medieval masons didn't carve new stone to match. They simply stopped building where the cave began. The fortress has no fourth wall in the traditional sense. It has a void, a darkness that extends back into the mountain farther than anyone has fully explored. Its foundations vanish into stone, making it genuinely impossible to determine where the mountain ends and the fortress begins. Geologists have tried, using ground-penetrating radar, sonar mapping, structural analysis. The integration is so complete that it reads as a single structure. Castle and cave, stone and void, human intention and geological inevitability merged into something that is neither and both. Its upper levels open directly into darkness, with chambers that lead not to rooms, but to caverns, not to corridors, but to voids. The builders used the cliff as a shield, rainwater redirected through the rock, channeled by natural fissures, temperature stabilized by the cave's constant coolness, walls protected from direct assault by the sheer face of the cliff. Even today, structural engineers marvel at how the castle distributes weight and resists collapse. The rock holds the building. The building braces the rock. They support each other in ways that seem almost biological. But practicality doesn't explain the choice completely, because this wasn't just a castle near a cave. This was a castle inside one. And that distinction matters. Caves were feared in medieval Europe. They represented the unknown, the underworld, the places where demons dwelled. Building a fortress directly into one was not strategic. It was psychological. It was a statement. But a statement to whom? And about what? Prejama Castle's most famous inhabitant was Erasmus of Lueg, also known as Erasmus Prejamski. To the Holy Roman Empire, he was a criminal, a robber knight who raided imperial convoys and defied authority. To local peasants, he was a protector, a man who stole from the powerful and sheltered the desperate. To history, he is a contradiction, part outlaw, part folk hero, part mystery. Erasmus was a knight who defied imperial authority, raiding noble convoys and sheltering fugitives from Habsburg justice. When the empire finally turned its full attention toward him, Erasmus retreated to Prejama. The response was predictable and overwhelming. Surround the castle, cut off supplies, starve him out. It was the standard siege tactic of the age. Wait. Patience costs nothing but time, and the empire had plenty of both. Except starvation never came. Days passed, then weeks, then months, and still Erasmus lived comfortably. Imperial soldiers watched food scraps tossed from the windows. They saw Erasmus mock them, throwing roasted meat from the walls to show he had plenty. Fresh cherries appeared in winter. Whole sides of venison were paraded in sight of starving soldiers. It should have been impossible. What they didn't see were the tunnels. Hidden behind the castle, deep within the cave system, were secret passageways leading out the other side of the mountain. Erasmus could move unseen, smuggling food and supplies, vanishing into the earth and returning without detection. He turned the very thing that should have been his prison into his lifeline. Prajama Castle could not be starved because it was never truly isolated. The mountain itself protected him. The stone that surrounded him also freed him. And the darkness that should have trapped him became his greatest advantage. The siege of Prajama became an embarrassment. Imperial soldiers froze through winters, their supplies running low, while the man they were supposed to be starving remained well-fed and comfortable. Morale collapsed. Men deserted. Officers questioned their orders, and rumors spread that the castle was cursed. Some claimed Erasmus was being fed by demons beneath the rock. Others believed the cave was a gateway to somewhere else entirely, a portal through which supplies arrived from distant lands or other realms. The Empire's forces began to fear the place, not because of Erasmus, but because of what protected him. Prajama was not just resisting them, it was humiliating them. And that made it something more than stone and mortar. It made it something alive. And so they waited. Not because waiting was wise, but because waiting is easier than understanding. Easier than admitting that some places operate by rules you don't control. Erasmus didn't fall in battle like knights are supposed to fall. He didn't fall to hunger despite months of siege. He didn't fall to the might of the Empire's armies with their superior numbers and resources. He fell to betrayal, the most human of endings, the most predictable tragedy. Legend says a servant revealed his routine to the besiegers, the one moment in every day when Erasmus was vulnerable. The castle's latrine was exposed on the outer cliff face, a necessity of medieval plumbing that could not be hidden inside the mountain. Even castles built into caves must deal with basic human needs. Even legends must answer nature's call. When Erasmus entered it on what seemed like an ordinary morning, the traitor signaled the besiegers with a prearranged sign. Some say a white flag. Some say a torch lit in daylight. Some say a horn blast. The specific method doesn't matter. What matters is that someone who knew his patterns used that knowledge as a weapon. A cannon was aimed with precision at the exposed section of wall. Cannons were new weapons then, terrifying and unreliable, but effective when they worked. The shot struck true. Stone shattered. The wall collapsed. The legend ended. Not with glory, not with a final stand. Not with any of the drama that makes for good songs and better stories. Erasmus of Lueg died not by sword or siege, not by starvation or surrender, not by any of the honorable or even dishonorable ways men expected to die in medieval warfare, but by timing and treachery, by one man knowing one routine and another man knowing how to aim. The one person who understood Prajama's secrets used them against the man those secrets protected. And perhaps that's fitting. Perhaps that's the lesson the mountain wanted to teach, that no barrier is perfect, that every defense has a flaw, that knowing a place's secrets doesn't guarantee your safety. Sometimes it just tells your enemies where to aim. Prajama Castle survived the cannon shot. The man did not. And the mountain continued to breathe beneath it, unchanged by human drama, unimpressed by human conflict, patient in ways humans cannot comprehend. Most visitors never realize they've only seen half of Prajama. Less than half, actually. What they see is the castle, the restored rooms, the furnished chambers, the historical exhibits. Perhaps they take the short cave tour, walking 200 feet into darkness on illuminated pathways with guardrails and safety lighting. But behind the fortress, far beyond the tourist routes, lies a cave system so vast that sections remain unexplored to this day, despite decades of dedicated speleological research. Over 6 miles of mapped tunnels stretch beneath the castle, measured and surveyed by experienced cave explorers using modern equipment. 6 miles of confirmed passages. But the key word is mapped. Unknown branches extend even farther into the mountain, disappearing into collapses or squeezes too tight for human passage, or vertical drops that require technical equipment and expertise most teams don't have. Ground-penetrating radar suggests there are chambers deeper still, spaces that exist but cannot be reached, voids in the stone that may have been sealed for millions of years. Some passages show clear signs of modification. Not recent work, old work, ancient work. Cut stone that shows tool marks inconsistent with medieval iron. Reinforced arches built with techniques that don't appear in any engineering texts from the period. Intentionally widened chambers with walls smoothed by something other than water. Evidence of human hands shaping the darkness, but questions about which humans and when and for what purpose. Others remain untouched, dark, jagged, ancient. The raw stone that existed long before humans walked upright, before mammals dominated the earth, before the ancestors of all life crawled from the oceans. These passages were not carved by people. They were carved by water, by geology, by time itself. Over millions of years, acidic water dissolved limestone grain by grain, creating a network so complex that no map can capture it fully. Passages that branch and reconnect, chambers that stack vertically through the mountain like floors in an impossible building, rivers that flow through some sections seasonally, flooding chambers and then vanishing completely for months at a time. Cavers report sudden drops in temperature in certain chambers, not gradual cooling as you descend deeper. Sudden, immediate. A 30-degree drop in 10 feet of passage with no airflow to explain it, no water source to cause evaporative cooling, no logical reason the temperature should change at all. Equipment malfunction in specific areas, always the same areas. Compasses spin uselessly, the needle rotating without settling, as if magnetic north keeps moving, or as if there's interference from something in the stone. Flashlights dim inexplicably, even with fresh batteries. LED lights, which should be stable and consistent, flicker and fade. Batteries drain faster than they should, losing charge at rates that make no physical sense. A battery that should last 8 hours dies in 40 minutes, and sound behaves incorrectly, fundamentally, impossibly wrong. Voices echo before they're spoken, the echo arriving a fraction of a second before the original sound, violating every principle of acoustic physics. Words return distorted, rearranged, the syllables scrambled as if something is listening first and then repeating back what it thinks it heard, or perhaps what it wants you to hear. Experienced cavers. People who have spent years understanding how sound moves through stone cannot explain this. They can document it, record it, measure the timing, but they cannot make it make sense. There are chambers no one can explain, rooms too perfectly round to be natural formation. Water doesn't carve perfect spheres. It carves irregular shapes, following weaknesses in the stone, creating organic curves and asymmetrical spaces. But some chambers in Prajama are spherical, not approximately round, spherical, with ceilings too smooth, lacking the texture that water erosion leaves. Walls that show marks of tools, scratches, and indentations that suggest cutting or scraping, but tools that predate known civilization, according to metallurgical analysis of the residue left in the marks. Older than bronze, older than copper, older than any metalworking culture on record. And places guides avoid entirely. Not because they're dangerous in the physical sense, not because of unstable rock or vertical drops or flooding risks. Those dangers they understand. Those dangers they can mitigate with proper equipment and training. They avoid certain areas because they feel wrong. Because experienced cavers, people who have spent years underground, who are comfortable in darkness, who navigate tight passages and deep voids without fear, refuse to enter them. They will not explain why in detail. They become uncomfortable when asked. They change the subject, or they simply say, "I won't go there," and end the conversation. When asked why, they don't have good answers. Not because they're inarticulate or superstitious. These are scientists, researchers, people who document everything and trust data over feeling. But they don't have good answers because the answer isn't rational. They just know. The way animals know not to drink poisoned water before they taste it. The way birds know to avoid certain valleys during migration, even though the routes would be shorter. The way dogs sense earthquakes before the ground moves. Instinct that warns before reason can explain. Evolutionary programming that says danger exists even when conscious thought can't identify why. Visitors report strange experiences at Prajama, not ghost stories told secondhand. Direct experiences, documented experiences, footsteps where no one stands, not the ambiguous sounds that could be anything, clear, distinct footfalls on stone floors in empty rooms, the rhythm of walking, heel strike, toe push, human gait. But when you turn to look, nothing. Just empty space where someone should be standing. Voices carried on cold drafts, whispering words in languages that don't exist anymore. Or perhaps never did. Linguists have tried to analyze recordings. The phonemes don't match any known language family. The structure is wrong. The rhythm is off. It sounds like language, has the cadence and intentionality of communication, but conveys nothing recognizable. As if it's language from something that learned to mimic human speech without understanding what speech is for. Low humming sounds deep within the rock. Not wind. Wind whistles, varies in pitch, changes with pressure. This is constant. Not water. Water gurgles, splashes, flows. This is smooth, not machinery. There is no machinery in the mountain. This is something else, a vibration that comes from below, from within, from the stone itself. Frequencies that border on infrasound, just at the edge of human hearing, felt more than heard. The kind of sound that triggers unease, that makes your chest feel tight, that tells something deep in your nervous system that danger is present even when your eyes see nothing wrong. People describe the sensation of being watched, not from the castle halls where other tourists walk with cameras and selfie sticks, not from the windows where the forest presses close and wildlife might observe human visitors with natural wariness, but from the walls themselves, from the stone. As if the mountain is aware. As if Prajama is not a place where things happen, but a thing that is happening. Constantly. Always. An ongoing event rather than a static location. Even when no one is there to witness it. Even when the castle is empty and locked and dark. It continues. Whatever it is. Whatever it does. It does not need observers to exist. Animals refuse certain passages in ways that cannot be trained away or coaxed past. Dogs stop abruptly at specific doorways and will not move forward, no matter how their owners coax them. These are not nervous dogs, not anxious or poorly socialized animals. These are working dogs, service dogs, animals trained to ignore distractions and follow commands. But they will not enter. They plant their legs, dig in, pull backward with all their strength. They whine with a distress that has nothing to do with physical fear. It's something deeper, something primal. The sound a dog makes when it knows something is fundamentally wrong with the world and cannot make you understand. Bats avoid entire sections of the cave, even though those sections should be perfect habitat. High ceilings for flight, stable temperatures, no predators, abundant insects, everything a bat population needs to thrive. But they fly around these sections, taking longer routes, expending more energy, burning calories they can't afford to waste, rather than pass through. Bat migration patterns have been studied here extensively. The detours are consistent, year after year, generation after generation. Young bats who have never flown these passages before still avoid them, suggesting this is not learned behavior, but something instinctive, something genetically programmed, an evolutionary adaptation that says this place is dangerous even when the danger cannot be identified. Horses refuse to approach certain parts of the castle grounds. Cats won't enter specific rooms. Birds avoid nesting in particular sections of the wall, even when those sections are sheltered and safe. Animals sense what humans rationalize away. They don't need explanations. They don't require proof. They don't debate whether something is real or imagined. They trust their instincts. And their instincts, sharpened by millions of years of evolution, tell them that some parts of Prajama should not be entered, that some doors should remain closed, that some darkness is not empty. Restoration workers have reported strange difficulties that go beyond the normal challenges of historical preservation. Measurements that fail repeatedly. Not user error. Not equipment malfunction. The numbers themselves refuse to stay consistent. A wall measured at 10 feet on Monday is 9 feet 8 inches on Wednesday. The same wall, the same tape measure, the same reference points. Numbers that don't add up no matter how many times you check them. Distances that change between morning and afternoon as if space itself is fluid here. As if the geometry of Prajama obeys different rules than the rest of the world. Plans that don't align with physical reality, despite being drawn from accurate surveys. Architects work from laser scans, the most precise measurement technology available. The digital models are perfect. But when construction begins, nothing matches. Walls that should be parallel aren't. Rooms that should be the same size differ by feet. Angles that should be 90 degrees measure 87 or 93. The building resists standardization. Tools break inexplicably under normal use. Hammers crack for no reason. The metal fracturing along grain lines that shouldn't exist. High-quality steel. Regular maintenance. They still fail. Saws bend while cutting soft limestone. Drills burn out in minutes under loads that should be trivial. Failure analysis shows nothing wrong with the tools. They simply stopped working in this specific location. Metal corrodes faster than it should inside the castle. Rust forms overnight on treated steel. The stone refuses to cut cleanly, crumbling or splitting in ways that make no structural sense. Doors slam without wind. Heavy oak doors, perfectly balanced on oiled hinges, slam shut with such force they crack their frames. Air pressure shifts between rooms without vents or windows. Barometric changes that should be impossible in sealed spaces. temperature drops occur in sealed chambers. 10, 15, 20 degree drops in minutes with no air exchange to explain it. Workers report feeling sudden gusts of cold air in spaces that should be perfectly still. Air that moves where it shouldn't. Pressure that builds and releases following no pattern anyone can predict. Pyjama does not behave like a ruin. It does not sit passively, while humans attempt to preserve it. It resists. Subtly. Persistently. As if the castle is not a structure at all, but something aware of intrusion. Something that tolerates visitors, but does not welcome them. Pyjama is officially classified as a defensive fortress, a military stronghold built to control territory and protect against invasion. That's what the historical plaques say. That's what tour guides repeat. That's what appears in every textbook and architectural study. But its design suggests something else. Why build into a cave rather than above it? Defensive advantage doesn't require embedding a structure into darkness. You can use the cliff without entering it. You can fortify the entrance without living inside it. But Pyjama doesn't just use the cave. It integrates with it. It becomes part of it. Why seal living quarters against darkness when darkness is the enemy of medieval life? Fire and light were precious. Torch smoke filled enclosed spaces. Yet Pyjama's chambers open directly into black voids, into passages that lead nowhere useful, into spaces that serve no defensive purpose. Why integrate a structure so completely with an unpredictable underground system? Castles were meant to be controlled environments, predictable, stable, secure. Pyjama is none of those things. Its lower levels flood seasonally. Its walls shift with temperature. Its foundations rest on stone that moves, however slightly, with geological pressure. Unless the cave was not the danger. Unless it was the reason. Unless Pyjama was built not to defend against human enemies, but to guard something beneath the mountain. Or to contain it. Or to monitor whatever ancient presence once drew humans to the cave, generation after generation, millennium after millennium. The castle may not have been protection from the world. It may have been protection for it. A lid placed over something that should not be allowed to breathe freely. Stone holds memory. Not metaphorically, not poetically, literally. Crystalline structures record pressure, temperature, sound waves in their molecular arrangement. Geologists can read stone like we read books, finding layers of history embedded in atomic structures. Every stress, every impact, every vibration leaves a trace. And limestone, the stone of Pyjama, is particularly good at this. It's porous enough to absorb, dense enough to retain, reactive enough to record chemical changes. It holds things, not just in cavities and fractures, but in its very structure. Caves remember sound in ways that still surprise acoustic engineers who study them. The right frequency at the right angle will echo for hours in certain formations, bouncing between walls, traveling through passages, amplifying in chambers designed by accident to be perfect resonators. Voices from centuries ago could still be vibrating through the stone, too faint for human ears, but present nonetheless in the molecular vibration of quartz crystals, waiting for the right conditions to amplify again. Waiting for someone to listen in the right way. Or perhaps for someone who doesn't know they shouldn't. Pressure creates memory that lasts millions of years. Every footstep, every storm, every season leaves an imprint in stone. The rock compresses microscopic amounts under weight, expands microscopic amounts with heat, shifts microscopic amounts that accumulate over time into measurable change. The stone remembers everyone who walked here, everything that happened here, everything that was hidden here. Not in writing, not in artifacts, in the fundamental structure of the material itself, in arrangements of atoms that tell stories if you know how to read them. And sometimes those stories seep out. Sometimes the memory becomes active again. Sometimes what was compressed finds release. Time operates differently in geological terms than it does in human terms. Predjama Castle has stood for over 800 years. That seems like a long time to us. An ancient structure, a monument to endurance, but it's an eye-blink in human evolutionary history, a fraction of a second in geological time, a momentary event in the lifespan of stone. The cave beneath it is millions of years old, formed when dinosaurs still walked the earth. Shaped by water that flowed when humans were not even a dream of evolution. When the ancestors of all mammals were small creatures hiding from reptiles. When the continents were arranged differently and oceans covered what is now dry land. Whatever existed there before the castle, whatever whispered to early humans who left their offerings in the dark, whatever drew them generation after generation into passages that terrified them. Whatever still hums in channels guides refuse to enter. Predjama didn't create it. Predjama didn't summon it. Predjama didn't cause it. Predjama sealed itself around it, built stone walls between it and the surface, created a barrier, a containment structure, a warning that has been misunderstood as a home. Today, Predjama Castle welcomes tourists. Thousands visit every year from around the world. Photographs are taken from every angle. Selfies are posed against medieval stonework. Families walk through restored rooms, learning about knights and sieges and medieval life. Stories are simplified into digestible narratives about brave knights and clever escapes and romantic legends. The darkness is lit by LED bulbs that never flicker and never die. The mystery is tamed by information placards explaining geology and history and architecture. The whispers are drowned out by the chatter of guided tours and the clicking of cameras and the voices of children asking questions their parents answer with comfortable certainty. But when the lights go out at closing time, when the last visitor leaves through the gift shop, when the gates lock and the parking lot empties, when the air grows cold and sound travels where it shouldn't, according to any acoustic principle, Predjama becomes something else. It returns to what it always was, underneath the tourist attraction, underneath the restoration work, underneath the comfortable historical narrative. A reminder that not all fortresses are built to defend against enemies, that you can see and fight and understand. Some are built to keep something contained that should never be free. Some are built to seal doors that should never be opened by accident or curiosity or ignorance. Some are built because humans sensed something they couldn't explain, couldn't quantify, couldn't prove, but knew with certainty was real, and did the only thing that made sense at the time. They put stone between themselves and it. Thick stone, blessed stone, stone carved with prayers and reinforced with rituals. Stone meant to last forever, because what it contained needed to be contained forever. The mountain still stands exactly where it has stood for millions of years. The cave still breathes with air pressure that changes without wind, with temperature shifts that follow no pattern, with sounds that originate from nowhere and travel to nowhere. And the whispers never stopped. They only learned how to wait, how to be patient, how to exist just below the threshold of hearing where humans rationalize them as wind or water or imagination, how to survive centuries by remaining just beneath the surface of awareness, just on the other side of the wall, where stone meets void, where light fails and darkness begins, where the barrier grows thin and something presses against it from below. Because Prajama is not just a castle built into a mountain. It's a barrier, a seal, a lid placed over an opening that something once used to breathe. And barriers are only necessary when something is pushing against them from the other side. When something wants out. When something is patient enough to wait for the moment when attention slips. When the stone finally crumbles with age. When the seal breaks and the darkness that was always there, always waiting, always listening to every footstep above, finally has room to breathe freely again. I'm Raven Vale, and this has been Whispers from the Dark, Season 2, Episode 4. Listen closely. Somewhere in the stone, something is listening back.